We're lucky enough to have Georgetown professor Cal Newport with us this morning. He has dedicated his career to helping people develop healthier, more balanced relationships with modern technology. He's now turning his attention to our inboxes. Email has long been heralded as having rescued modern work life from the inefficiencies of memo pads and fax machines. But Newport argues that email has actually created a productivity disaster, reducing profitability and perhaps even slowing overall economic growth. In his new book, A World Without Email, Reimagining Work in an Age of Communication Overload, Newport makes the case that our inbox-driven approach to work is broken and offers a vision for liberating workers from the tyranny of this constant communication. Again, the name of the book is A World Without Email, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Cal Newport to our program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, it's my pleasure.
A great pleasure to have you on. I found this book fascinating, and you make some really interesting, very effective points here. What brought you to the subject initially?
Well, I had written a book back in 2016 that made the case for uninterrupted focus, and we should do more of it. And the big question that came out of that book is, but why is it so hard? Why is it so hard in the modern office to find even an hour to concentrate on something hard without some sort of distraction? And it was that question that led me down this five-year journey into writing this book that documented this trouble we got into, how we got into it, and how we can hope to get out of it.
I don't want to focus too much time because I want to stay with the book here, but it is interesting to me because it seems like we in our culture realize that there was a problem with the nonstop nature of email and that it was a master that you could never stop working for. And then came the pandemic, which made us have to do it and have it invade our private time even more. So I'm curious of how that plays into, as this book comes out, as we're not only trying to figure out how to deal with reimagining work in this world of communication, but reimagining work in also perhaps working from home or whatever your situation is.
Well, I think the timing of this book with respect to the pandemic was fortuitous, because what happened is when we moved everyone remote unexpectedly is that the worst excesses of this style of collaboration, where we just sort of work things out on the fly with back and forth messaging, they got intensified. And so we took this pain point and we made it even more painful. But the optimistic hope here is that as we return from the pandemic, we're going to be in a mindset of reimagination. Should we all have to go to offices? Should we be more remote? Should we have different types of positions? I'm hoping this reimagination now will also tackle, should we just largely collaborate by rock and rolling with messages? And I'm thinking the pain of what that's been like this last year will lead a lot of people to say, no, we need something better.
You talk in the book about how email triggers anxiety in workers. Talk a little bit about that process of what it is that sets us off, if you will.
We are social creatures. So our brain is wired over hundreds of thousands of years to take very carefully the maintenance of social interaction. So if you take that brain out of the Paleolithic and then you give it an inbox that's full of communication from people you know, but it comes in faster than you can keep up with. So that in every moment that you're not tending that inbox, there's more and more communication and conversation requests coming in that you are ignoring. That makes that deeply wired social aspect of our brain really uncomfortable and really anxious. So it gives us this background beat of discomfort and anxiety that we are ignoring people. And no matter how much our frontal cortex tells us, it's okay, we have norms, we have etiquettes, email's not critical, the deeper part of our brain does not get that message. And so we've made a style of collaboration that just happens to clash with the way that we are actually wired. And as a result, we're anxious all the time.
So what is the right way to turn it on and turn it off in the sense of what is right for us and what is right for those who are not only communicating with us, but for the people who sign our paychecks?
Well, I think we have to go below the inbox, right? Okay, so our inbox is full of all this information because the main way we collaborate is with back and forth messages. That's why we have to check it all the time. If we just try to solve this problem in the inbox, let's say with our personal habits, I'm going to check it less often, I'm going to turn off my notifications, we're probably going to fail. The pressure that's bringing us back to the inbox is rational. If the main way we collaborate is with back and forth messaging, it is a problem if we're not at the inbox. So if we're going to solve this problem, we actually have to go below the inbox and say, let's replace this mode of collaboration. I call it the hyperactive hive mind workflow in my book. Let's replace this hyperactive hive mind with alternatives. Let's think through new rules, new systems, new processes for collaborating that require much less of this unscheduled messaging. Until we replace the underlying workflows generating all these messages, we're going to have a real hard time dealing with an inbox that's full of them.
So there's also the I'll say it. I have basically one email box. I think, you know, that maybe that's true for most people, or they have a couple. They have their work one, they have a home one, whatever. But that intersection, there are times that you just want to email your brother, which is different than dealing with, a pitch from a publicist who has this really cool book about a professor who wrote a book about a world without email and wants to get in touch with you to book that segment. So how much of it is on us? I mean, it seems in reading the book that a lot of it is on us to kind of set the boundaries.
I think that is right. It's boundaries, but also processes, right? This is where we really begin to get the improvement. So what email is good for example, is delivering information. You know, I would rather get a pitch from a publicist via an email than a letter because it's more convenient.
Yes.
But where it struggles is for back and forth collaboration, because now I have to keep checking my inbox, waiting for your message to come so I can reply to it right away. Boundaries alone aren't going to get us there, because again, if there's no alternative way for us to collaborate, then boundaries are actually causing an impediment to getting things done. That's why people fail so often when they just try to set personal boundaries. The real move here is to say, you know what? We send each other emails a lot about this, trying to schedule meetings, trying to book a guest, whatever. Let's put a process, not a boundary, but a process in place that lets us do this thing we often do without having to check our inboxes a lot. So I think it's when we start putting in processes to find an alternative way to collaborate than just unscheduled back and forth messages, that's where the real wins come in. When it's just us trying to fix our own habits, this hasn't worked for 10 years. We've been trying this for 10 years and it's not working, because our habits to get us to check the inbox less cause trouble if we don't actually change why the inbox is being used in the first place.
So the idea of you getting back to what I was just saying, what is the best method? Should we have separate identities of this is my home email, this is my work email, this is my board member email, this is my ...
I think that could help. We could go farther, though, and say let's think of it more broadly as this is the way I communicate with these type of people about these type of things. This is the way I communicate with these type of people about these type of things. Now, in some cases, this might be different email addresses. In some cases, there might not be any email address involved at all. It's actually, you know, there's some shared document that my producer puts notes in and I check it once a week. We don't need email at all. But certainly what we're doing now, and I think this is what you're getting at, which is let's just have one address that's associated with our name. And everything we deal with anyone about anything comes into the same box. You know, we're used to that, but it's really a ridiculous way to actually organize our work and our life. But again, my bigger picture here is, and I think you're absolutely right about this, think about your different roles, think about the different ways you communicate with people and what you communicate with them about, and say, how do I actually want to do this? And when you start thinking that way, you get a lot of creativity and innovation about how that part of your life goes. And it might be multiple email addresses. It might be email addresses plus other tools. It might be actually just taking certain types of communication out of your life because it's not worth the cost. But we have to do this critical thinking.
When you came to this and looked at this world without email, talk about how that world starts to exist. I mean, how realistic is that to have a world without email?
I think it's inevitable. I think it's inevitable because there's a huge profit motive behind it. This is one of these rare issues in workplace dissatisfaction where management is aligned with the employee. So if you're out there talking to C-suite types about the companies they run, they don't like this hyperactive hive mind either because it's making their employees miserable. They're turning over and they're not getting anything done. It's just complicated to fix. And the employees hate it because it's making their life miserable and they're not getting anything done. Everyone wants to fix it. And there's potentially hundreds of billions of dollars of GDP on the line if we get serious about productivity in the knowledge sector. When we did this in the industrial sector in the 20th century, it caused astounding growth. And we are just getting started with this thinking in the knowledge sector. So there's such a financial pressure to get better at actually working with our brains. So I think it's inevitable. I pick this up from Silicon Valley. I pick it up from investors I talk to. I pick it up from CEOs I talk to. So to me, the only question is, do you get out in front of this and make your life better, easier, and get a competitive advantage, or do you wait and trail behind these changes? But one way or the other, I think they're coming.
So it seems that we I find myself probably trailing behind, but is there a point where it becomes too late?
No, I think it's better to think about, let's think about car manufacturing, for example, right?
Yes.
That when we first started building cars, all of the companies used what was known as the Kraft method, which was very flexible and convenient and easy. It's kind of like the industrial equivalent of the hyperactive hive mind. You put a chassis up on some sawhorses, you'd have a team of craftspeople, and they would just sit around the chassis and build a car. It was very easy, very convenient. Henry Ford came along. It was hard to do the experimentation, but he finally figured out the continuous motion assembly line is 10 to 100x more productive. Go forward another 10 years, there's not a single car manufacturer left doing it the old way because the new way is so much better. That's how I would think about what's going to happen with knowledge work collaboration is, as we move past the hive mind, it's going to be so clearly better that everyone is going to follow behind it. No car company was left behind saying, I'm still going to build the cars in the old easy way because I'm just used to it. When there's a better way to do things, at least in the business sector, it spreads. And so I think we're going to have a discontinuous phase shift here. It's going to seem almost overnight that suddenly you're going to be hearing about these new ways of collaborating, then a couple big companies are going to do it. And within 2 years, it's like when open offices swept the country, email's role in people's lives will suddenly seemingly be completely upended.
You have touched on much of this, but I just want to talk about how the book is set up. The first part of the book is the case against email, and the second part is principles for a world without email. Those principles being the attention capital principle, the process principle, the protocol principle, and the specialization principle. In our final moments, can you just quickly address those principles? We've talked a little bit about them, but just how they unfold and ultimately can get us to your conclusion, which you refer to as a 21st century moonshot.
Well, so we have this attention capital principle is the big idea that we need to get more serious about how do we work in knowledge work. We can't just do what seems convenient. The process principle then lays out that idea I mentioned that the way to do this is to actually go process by process, the things we do repeatedly and actually have a conversation. Is there a better way to implement this than simply going back and forth on email? This is what happened in the industrial sector. It was called process reengineering, and it was miraculous in the growth it created. The protocol principle then says, okay, while you're working on improving these processes, one thing to keep in mind is if you can have some sort of set rules about how certain collaboration happens, you can often make the cost much lower. And the specialization principle introduces this idea that we do too much, and we should actually probably have people working on less things, but doing the things they do better. There's a really strong economic argument for that mode of working, which is a lot less hyperactive, a lot less communication, is probably a more productive deployment of cognitive capital. I'm not involved in 30 things. I'm not emailing with 3 dozen different people. I do 2 things. I do them really well. That's probably a better way to approach work. So these are all various ideas that all come under the same heading of we need to get more serious about how we work and knowledge work. We can no longer just let this hyperactive hive mind, informal, easy, convenient first idea we had, we cannot just let that dominate anymore. It's causing too much trouble.
Well, the book is fascinating, and it is just filled with really practical and interesting observations, but also practices and principles, as we just noted. The name of the book is A World Without Email, Reimagining Work in an Age of Communication Overload. The book is published by Portfolio. Cal Newport, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is A World Without Email, Reimagining Work in an Age of Communication Overload. It is published by Portfolio Penguin. Cal Newport, the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.